Welcome to a weekly review of North Dakota's legislative news. Now, here's your host, Dave Thompson, with North Dakota Legislative Review.
And I'm Dave Thompson with North Dakota Legislative Review. Thanks for joining us. Well, the Prairie Dog Bill is now law. It was signed by the governor this week. It creates a new bucket for oil tax money, and what that money is going to do is fund local infrastructure projects for cities, counties, townships, and airports. It's going to take a little while for the bucket to fill, and then the local governments can access it. Also, the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation is still pushing moving the women's prison from New England, moving that to Bismarck. And it's in Senate Appropriations right now. Corrections is saying that services are lacking for the women who are in New England, and the services would be better in Bismarck. And one more thing, well, we no longer have blue laws effective August 1st. The Senate has voted to repeal the remaining laws that prevented stores from being open before noon on Sunday. And what the Senate did was flip its position from where it was 2 years ago. After years of debate, stores will now be able to open Sunday mornings. This week, the Senate voted 25-21 to repeal the Sunday closing law. Political correspondent Chad Mira caught up with the bill's primary sponsor.
Joining us now is Representative Shannon Roars Jones. Representative, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
Buzz of the Capitol this week, one of the most watched bills that we've had this session was the Sunday closings repeal, and close vote in the Senate earlier this week. Were you surprised by the results?
I was not surprised by the result when it happened, but I was surprised by a couple of the yeses I picked up at the last minute. That would have been yesterday morning. Before the vote happened. So right up until that point, I knew I had 23 yeses. I knew who the firm yeses were. I knew who the firm no's were, and I had four maybes that were floating around. But none of them were really set in stone. So it was a real pleasant surprise to pick up one of those and to flip the vote of Jim Roars, who's my dad, who I had in my firm no column for the last several weeks. It was a real surprise for me.
All right, this is an idea that failed just in the last biennium, so you really had to do some work to flip some of those votes. Was it tough?
There was a lot of work, and there was a lot of people involved as far as, you know, utilizing social media to make sure that constituents reached out to their legislators, using some of the local and state chambers to make sure that business owners got involved and reached out to their legislators and just made sure that there was a real grassroots effort in getting the information out to each one of the legislators so that they knew that their constituency really wanted this.
Do you think that was the difference in the vote this year as opposed to years past?
I think that was a large part of it, and the fact that I am just generally pesky, and I kept after all of the senators who I didn't have a firm yes or no from so that I could, you know, make sure that things were going to come out the way I was anticipating them to come out and there were no surprises.
I think I even caught a glimpse of you yesterday kind of pacing back and forth between chambers when the Senate was taking on the vote. Were you keeping a close eye on it?
I was keeping a very close eye on it. I came over once they started debating the bill. I had to run back a couple times to vote in the House, but fortunately I had some friends in the House who were sending me messages like, come back and vote now. And so I ran back and voted two or three times, but then I kept over here to try and listen to the debate, understand what the arguments were. You know, there wasn't a lot I could do to influence it at that point, but I was still very interested in what they were saying and what the result would be.
Okay. Representative Roars Jones, thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.
And we are now joined by Senator Brad Beckedahl of Williston. He's a Republican and a member of Senate Appropriations. Senator, thanks for being here.
Thank you, David. Pleased to be here with you and your viewing audience.
Since we're talking Senate Appropriations, I'm going to start with this because I was so fascinated by the UAV presentation. UAVs, of course, are the unmanned aerial vehicles or drones. It maybe is kind of a hidden gem. It hasn't got a lot of attention this session, but you know, they're asking for a little bit more seed money to expand it.
Well, it's a great program for the state of North Dakota. We're very early entrance into that play, and because of that, we have a real niche of opportunity here. We have some investment, as you've said, but a great return on investment potential for the state, communities, and businesses in the state to act upon this. And it looks to me like what the governor recommended and what the Appropriations Committee is looking at right now probably should work its way through the chamber in a positive manner.
And of course, they're talking about expanding it, the whole research westward toward central and western North Dakota.
You're exactly right. There's a great desire and a need in Western North Dakota, where I'm from, in the oil patch areas, for drone systems, for monitoring pipelines, for looking at oil well placements, for looking at facilities to make sure everything's operating properly out there in the oil field. And the companies are really clamoring for this service. So the sooner we can expand into those areas, I think the better. Plus, the economics of being out there is probably one of the driving forces the industry needs to look at as well.
We should also mention that you're chairing a subcommittee that looking at the commerce budget where this drone technology is in.
That's correct. In fact, we have a meeting later this afternoon in that subcommittee as well. And the way we do it in the Senate is we take the bill testimony from the public, and then we go into subcommittees and meet with further with other interested parties to make sure we get the bill properly settled for the full committee. And we'll be doing some of that today.
Another issue that you're going to be considering, and there was a hearing last Friday, as we mentioned earlier, about the Department of Corrections Rehabilitation, their budget. And again, the director, Leanne Birch, is pushing for the idea of closing the New England facility, actually ending the state contract, and wouldn't necessarily close the facility, but moving the women from there to Bismarck, to the Missouri River Correctional Center, and then moving the men from MRCC to Jamestown. House did not look very favorably on that. How are you feeling about that?
Well, it's got a lot of moving parts, just as you suggested. I'm not sure it can be all done at once. It's like playing a football game and only having four plays to get to the end zone, and they all work well to get you there. And it's aggressive. I think that's some of the consternation revolves around what happens to the community and the jobs they have out there, and I understand that fully. But I also understand the points made by the director, Leanne Birch, that she's there to make sure the inmates and their families and the services that need to be provided are the best they can deliver from a system. And so we have to just try and sort that out. Hope maybe there's some things we could do to push in that direction without getting all the way there. But I think we need to take the agency's concerns very seriously and see what we can do with that. This is one of those areas where you have policy and to some degree politics. It's a huge impact to New England, and I understand that being from a small rural area in western North Dakota as well. And are there things we could have done differently or still could do differently to make New England better? That's part of the debate I'm interested in hearing.
What I heard, and it wasn't really clear before, to me at least, was that the building out at New England needs some work.
That's exactly what was brought up in the hearing. And I'd like to hear more from the people involved in that facility if I can. And the other thing that we found out is that, you know, the services for addiction counseling and some of those things, some of the health facilities are obviously better in Bismarck. But it points out some of the things we deal with in all of rural North Dakota is because we're not in an area that has those services, should we be helping to deliver those services to the rural areas as well? In other words, are we creating this system where you have to live in an urban environment to get all these services? And I tend to take the view that from the state standpoint and the legislative standpoint, we should be defining the level of services for our citizens across the state and then finding ways to deliver it to everybody.
And that dovetails into behavioral health then too.
Exactly. So we have huge needs in behavioral health. We are optimistically looking at more of those this session than we've been in my first two sessions here. And I think we're looking at funding more of those. So I think we've made progress this session so far. Obviously, the session's not over, but I'm pleased with some of the bills that we've acted on for human services now. I'm pleased with the reorganization that has been brought to human services. I'm very pleased with the county social services takeover and how that's come across now in its final form. I give real kudos to the department. They've worked hard, as well as the counties and the employees within those systems.
So it's amazing how these things fit together like a puzzle, and especially when you come to corrections and behavioral health, because a lot of the women are there because they're drug offenders or mm-hmm. they have some kind of addiction problems.
Yeah, and we found that in both of our facilities, male and female, inordinately more females are in the system right now with addiction problems, though, when you really look at it, and it needs to be addressed. When we went into Justice Reinventing several years ago, or several sessions ago, the idea was we shouldn't be putting people into prison facilities just for treatment. Treating the disease and treating the addiction, Governor Burgum's exactly right, and not putting them in those facilities are are going to be better for the families. They'll be better for the people impacted by these disease indicators. And that's where we should be placing our emphasis. Plus, it's very expensive to build and man and operate facilities. We would be better off treating these problems before they get there, and once they get there, treating them so they don't have recidivism to go into it as well.
And we should make the point that the New England facility is not necessarily state-owned. It's a state contract, but it's owned by the Southwest Region Correctional, I can't remember the acronym.
It's a consortium that they have down there of seven or eight counties that went together and have that facility. And they filled a niche at the time. They had a school property that was being closed, a private school property. They went in and took it over and made the contract with the state at the time. They filled a need at the time. Whether it still fills that need in our current environment is something we have to sort out.
One other thing that was in the Commerce budget and might be back again, but it's already been talked to by the governor in front of your committee, and you know where I'm going with that, mm-hmm. and that's the Theodore Roosevelt Library. He's very committed to it. He wants the $50 million from the legacy fund earnings in order to leverage $100 million from donors. How are you feeling about that these days?
Well, I think it's a great project. I think it's a great proposal. I'm really concerned about how we fund it. Obviously, we look at a lot of programs out there. As I said, we're making great progress in behavioral health right now. That requires funding. There's a lot of programs out there that I'd like to see the funding solidified first before we get into that area. It's to some degree a want versus a need right now, in my mind. But the governor's exactly right. We have this window of opportunity we really need to act on. I would love to have that facility in Western North Dakota. I'd love to see it here. Theodore Roosevelt is a national name of great fame, and I think he'd bring great credit to our state, and already has. So I would love to move it forward. If there was a way to do it without with committing to the $50 million, but not appropriating the $50 million all at once, I think that would make it easier. Legislative intent, some money now, and some money to come in the future, because we're talking about funding an endowment. You really don't need a fully funded endowment for a brand new facility on the first day it opens.
That sounds a lot like Senator Mathers' amendment that he's been floating around. Take care of the needs first, like behavioral health, et cetera, and then create an endowment. So that might be palatable, perhaps.
I think so, and you have to remember, in this system, we deal with a House chamber and a Senate chamber. We all have spending priorities in both chambers going through the process right now. So as Senator Holmberg points out, even though it's day 50 in the session right now, we're still early in the process of sorting all that out. And, look to the 65 to day 75 time in the session, and I think you'll see that sorted out better.
Yeah, it's like the second period of a three-period hockey game, because third period being conference committees where a lot of things are hammered out.
Exactly, and we're just not there yet. So Senator Holmberg's exactly right. Give us some time. We'll work through this. We think we'll make something happen that's in the best interest of the state.
Let me get your take on something that happened in the House. The Senate passed this bill, $45 million over 2 years for the two research universities in terms of, mm-hmm. trying to boost that a little bit more. House killed it, but did say that there are a couple other vehicles out there. I think there's a $3 million bill that Representative Nathy has. There are a couple other things talking about research. Weren't you a supporter of the $45
million? I was, actually. Research is a huge component for our universities. And brings great opportunities statewide. I mean, just look what we've done with NDSU, just in terms of ag research alone. Look what we've done with the ERC and UND, with the oil advancements we made in the Bakken system. We've taken that from 1% to 2% recovery in the system of oil in place to up to 7 to 10%, beyond that even in some cases. And that's due to research. You have to put the investment in to get the gain on the backside. And so I would be fully in support of the original bill that was placed, that was the House killed. The other bill that's out there, the LIFT bill, which is Representative Mike Nathy's bill, does some of that, but really when you look at it, the research bill from the Senate, the $45 million, was to do research to try and find programs or projects that we could advance later. That's research. Representative Mike Nathy's bill is actually a bill that takes research that's already been done for an early product and try to deliver it to commercialization. So I think they worked hand in hand. I'm not sure one works best without the other. It would be nice if we could find a way to still do some of what the original research bill did.
Do you hold out any hope that you can?
I'm going to have to see what we have for vehicles between each chamber right now to see if there's any opportunity to do that, but I'm sure that will still be a discussion.
Is it a case of there's some reluctance to deal with the legacy fund?
I think that's part of it, and to be honest with you, you've kind of opened up an area of interest to me because I've always felt, and I was on the original committees that put together the legacy fund years ago when we brought it before the public, so I have a history there. But it was always my hope that at some point when we started to see the interest dollars dump into the general fund for use, that we would have already defined a use or, say, a philosophical use for those monies. And we just have not done that yet. And I think that's why you see 141 legislators with probably 141 ideas on how to use that, and a governor that has ideas as well. I really think we should have some commission that sits down and says, where are we going with this? And let's have a plan moving forward.
Well, there's a possibility maybe of a delayed bill or a study that might be added later. Yeah. That could happen, perhaps.
Yeah, I just think that it's a great program to have that interest out there to work with, but I think we kind of flail in the water a bit when we don't have a plan set up. And that I'm talking about something bipartisan. I'm not talking about just a Republican plan here. I'm talking about all the branches, all the parties, and everybody being involved in moving this forward with some kind of a philosophical plan. What are we going to use it for? What's it going to do?
It's a savings account right now, but there is a purpose for a savings account too.
Yeah, so. And we may not get to a point this session where we define that, but I've asked the leader in the Senate if he can consider some type of a mechanism to put together a study about this as well. You mentioned a study possibility, so hopefully that's something we can see.
And he might be pre-designed to do that because I've heard him say about a few things about maybe having a narrow definition or some kind of definition of what the legacy fund is. And you've heard the same thing, that they're worried that somebody might have an initiated measure and start dumping into it.
So. Yeah, and that's always, the public has that right, and none of us should be taking that away. What I would say, though, is that, the legacy fund was originally designed to have a couple of benefits. One was to set aside money long-term from a one-time harvest of oil monies so that future generations could see a benefit. But it was also designed with the interest coming to the general fund so that there would be a present-day benefit. People here today should see some benefit off of that as well. And so we need to balance that, but I'd really like to see a definition of where the present-day benefit is.
Well, I have to ask you about this subject because you've also been involved in discussions about changing governance in higher education. The current bill that's pending is a 15-member board, one single board, maybe some subcommittees to look at various colleges, one for the two research universities, maybe one for the two-year schools, one for the four-year schools. If you had your druthers, what would you rather do?
David, I sat on the governor's task force, and we met 10 or 11 times over the period of the year before the session started. And it was so enlightening to see that process and what we really dug into there. Ultimately, what we found out is the current board, with its membership, is too small for the work task at hand. And I saw that when I saw good people leaving the board because they couldn't balance the interests of family and business and their other careers plus this. And it's not going to get any better. We need to do something there. And the three board option that went out of committee, that came to the House, that got defeated after it went to a two board option. It was unfortunate the way that all happened because I think it would have been nice to see the public weigh in on that. They don't have a chance now with that option gone. There's a bill in the Senate for an option right now to let the public look at an expanded one board, which we did look at in the task force. And there are components in that vote that's coming before the Senate that the task force actually thought would make a one board system better. Is it as far as the governor wanted to go? Not at all. But is it going to be better than the system we have today? I think most people would agree it would be an improvement and probably make the system better.
And just to make the point, the governor did testify in the Senate about maybe amending back to a two board bill.
It really is his favorite, and he's very driven by the fact that he thinks that's the best option. And I grant him that's his right, and he's a very intelligent man, probably knows way more about it than I do, but that's not where the legislature took it. We had a vote in the House, and they defeated that bill. So Didn't seem like a lot of sense into going back to that in the Senate just to have it defeated again in the House. So we're here to make things work, and making things work right now may be the option of the one board to go to the public vote.
In the couple of minutes we have left, I have to ask this question. Where do you see the wet bundles or sticky wickets?
You know, right now I see the legacy fund interest, obviously, is the number one in my mind that we have to deal with. I think we removed one of the sticky wickets when we had the March update to our forecast. Mm-hmm. I think that helped put us in a better position to do some things we were already lining up to do. And then, we're still dealing with some of the discussion of legislative action versus initiated measures. I think there is legitimate concern about outside interests coming in here and manipulating our state constitution document to fit their needs. And in this day of social media and quick marketing, you could make things happen.
And therein lies a conundrum, because it's a right in the Constitution for citizens to initiate, but with the changes in social media, as you said, and out-of-state interest, it could be a real delicate balancing act.
Yeah, and really, if you look at it, North Dakota set up that system to be, very user-friendly for the public, and I agree with that totally. In today's world, it might be needing some adjustments, and I'd like the public to weigh into that. I'm not saying we should be doing it all ourselves. And everything we do in that area right now has to go to vote of the public, and I think that's more than fair and right.
Senator, thank you for your time today.
Thanks, Dave.
Our guest, Senator Brad Beckedahl from Williston, he's a Republican. This week, Governor Burgum signed a bill that will allow Native American students to wear eagle feathers and plumes at graduation. It was the first bill from Representative Ruth Buffalo to become law, but there could be several others to come for that freshman legislator. In honor of Women's History Month, political correspondent Chad Mira reports on the new lawmaker.
December 3rd, Representative Ruth Buffalo, a member of the MHA Nation, was sworn in as the first Native American female Democrat to get elected to State House.
I'm still learning, and I know there's so much work to be done, so I do feel that I hit the ground running.
In her first session, Representative Buffalo is the primary sponsor on 8 bills.
If you look at all of the bills that I've introduced, it's mainly looking at keeping our community safe and also looking at our most vulnerable, our women and children.
Only one of those 8 bills has failed so far.
She's done very well.
Indian Affairs Commission Executive Director Scott Davis.
For those bills to get passed coming from freshman legislators and a minority group, you're going to need bipartisan sponsorship on that.
A number of the bills address Native American issues.
Her just having a seat at the table and voicing, making our voices heard, as well as other North Dakotan voices heard that have been underrepresented, is a great thing.
3 bills specifically address the problem of missing and murdered people.
I feel like I'm just doing what's asked of me. People approach me, it doesn't matter which nationality. I'm here to represent all North Dakotans, and the demographics in North Dakota is changing.
Her work on the issue even sent her to Washington, D.C. last week to testify on behalf of Savannah's Act.
Our eyes were opened to the very real threat before us.
She said Savannah Graywin's case continues to inspire her work as a lawmaker.
Having experienced that firsthand, it definitely has sparked a constant reminder that we must do better.
And after just a few months on the job, one of her bills has already become law.
Now Chad joins us on set. And Chad, what are you looking at over the next week or so?
Well, your interview with Senator Beckedahl set us up nicely, because I was hoping to talk about the Legacy Fund, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're all still wondering, what's it going to be used for? Well, we learned a couple things this week. One thing you talked to Senator Beckedahl about, the bill that would provide the research money for UND and NDSU, that failed. That would have used some legacy fund earnings, as well as the idea of state income tax relief, using the legacy fund for that. That failed this week also. So we know it won't be used for that. And of course, you can't talk about the legacy fund without talking about the Theodore Roosevelt Presidential Library. And we saw the governor testify again this week on its behalf, something he's starting to do a little bit more this session than what we're used to seeing from his first biennium.
Senator Beckedahl's chairing the Committee on Commerce. That's where it was in the House, and the House took it out. I have a feeling that might be in conference committee, and maybe one of the last bills we'll act on, I think.
Yeah, I think so, mainly because they're still trying to get their funding priorities ironed out. We discussed the new revenue forecast last week on this show, and they didn't want to commit any money necessarily that they didn't have yet. So it's an issue that I think will start to pick up steam here as we get later into the process.
You know, there are so many issues still left unresolved out there. One is the makeup of the Board of Higher Education, mm-hmm. whether it's going to be one board, two board, three board, 12, 15, 11, eight members. That's out there too. And I think there might be a couple of hidden things out there. You know, the ethics bill might be coming up yet.
The ethics bill is going to be a big one, a hotly debated topic too. And interestingly, you brought that up. That was, you know, an amendment, a measure that was added to the ballot through petition, mm-hmm. constitutional amendment. And that's something also that there's a bill currently being discussed about making it harder for citizens to get a constitutional amendment on the ballot. This bill would require a 60% vote at the ballot. It would also double the number of signatures you need on a petition to get something on the ballot. That's something that was heard, and I believe it was in committee this week as well. So that could be coming up very shortly.
There are a lot of things that we're going to be keeping our eyes on for sure.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you very much for joining us. This has been North Dakota Legislative Review. I'm Dave Thompson.